All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks are doing local podcasts. Good morning. April 30th, 2026. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. Hope it's great wherever you are at. It is Thursday. Back to work today. Thought we would come upstairs, sit down, see if we can do a podcast. Been an interesting couple days. I've been dealing with a rib injury, and I don't recall injuring it. I'm just dealing with the pain from the injury, but the injury I do not remember. I'm not even sure if there was an injury. I just may have pulled it, or I don't know what I did, but man, my ribs were hurting. I'd take some Advil. Went big time into the Advil yesterday. Feel a little bit better today. Actually got up this morning, cut the grass, had a few things to do. I was trying to do that yesterday, just didn't get it done. So didn't even go to a meeting yesterday. That's how bad it was. But I feel a lot better. Got up this morning, mowed the lawn, and thought we'd come upstairs and see if we could sit here and do a little bit of a podcast. Interesting series of events. Back in the day, it's funny, the Social Podcast Network was actually a podcast network that we actually used to do. We used to have a bunch of people doing podcasts when podcasts were cool, man. And I don't think we have the website. I just have the habit of having that as the introduction. I don't think the website, there's a girl that used to run the website. She'd be like, someone sent you something or someone sent a message or something. But I don't even think that network exists anymore. But it was a lot of fun. But I had, we used to do an In Too Deep podcast, the In Too Deep Pearl Jam podcast with my buddy Carlos. And him and I had a little bit of a falling out. Sometimes you meet people, they come into your life and they're just so cool, right? They're so, it's just you kind of yearn to see them and hang out with them. It's always fun, a lot of laughs. That's how Carlos was. When he showed up and we started that, we actually did a podcast before that one called Broke and Stoked. And I was broke and he was stoked. And oh my God, it was so funny. I used to listen to my own podcast. It was hilarious. And then it turned into a Pearl Jam podcast, which was fantastic. Him and I are both big Pearl Jam fans. But sometimes the light's so bright early that it fizzles pretty quickly. And we had a couple of little issues that started to show up between us, or a little bit of difference in personalities and so on and so forth. And one thing leads to another, and we stopped doing the podcast. And I was actually okay. I had a lot on my plate back in those days. I was kind of doing Discovery Music Podcast, the I'm Sorry About Last Night, the Rehoboth Social. We were doing 3 or 4 podcasts a week, and so it'd become a lot. And so when it sort of fizzled out and ended, I was okay with it. But always knowing that that was a fantastic podcast, it was a lot of fun. Only problem with that podcast is that it brought out a lot of my character defects. My buddy Carlos, who is not an alcoholic, but man, he is a fucking pistol. And he would, aggravate me, antagonize me, all of them, all of the demons. And I would have to dive right back in the sarcasm. As a young kid, I was like a ninja. I was a sarcastic ninja, and I could really cut and tear people up. And that was definitely something that I had to work on when I came into the program. Is sarcasm is not good. Right? It's a devil. But man, sometimes it's funny. And if there's an agreement that we're both cool with the sarcasm, we can really get into it. And him and I used to really get into it and make fun of each other. And with all of that, sometimes I would feel bad about myself. Sometimes I'd feel bad about some of the things that I said to Carlos. And so it was an interesting time. And that ended. And that was back during the pandemic. So it's been 3 or 4 years, right, since we've really communicated. Well, I got a text from him because his son is now in college, and now his son has become a huge Pearl Jam fan. And he's like, I'm thinking about, maybe we should start up the podcast again. I was like, I don't know, man, because it brought up a lot of old feelings, right? A lot of history. But it sounds like, we've all changed a little bit. We've all gotten a little better. I don't know. It's weird. He's like, call me tomorrow, which was yesterday, and we'll have coffee. And I was like, okay. And I didn't call him. And so I texted him last night. I'm like, yeah, sorry, my ribs are bothering me. And you know, I asked him a few questions if he thought this would be worthwhile and, you know, worth doing. He was like, yeah, I think it'll be really worthwhile. But it's, you know, it's still a lot of old feelings, man. Live in Chicago, Pearl Jam. Yeah, we'll probably start doing that podcast again. I don't know. What the hell? Let's go for it. I really love that guy. Sometimes it can get a little tense, but we'll see. You know. But what else is going on? You know, I got a phone call. Got a phone call from my buddy Dean on the road. And, you know, that is one of the grateful things I have, or one of the grateful things I, one of the reasons, excuse me, one of the reasons I am grateful is for the camaraderie I have with fellow folks who are in recovery on the same journey. And, you know, I've been having, you know, as much as my life, I don't know what my life sounds like to this podcast, but, you know, for the most part, I have a fantastic life, right? It's all good. Kids are good. Work is good. Health is good. Yada, yada, yada. But there are underlying little issues, and I share about a lot of them in this podcast. And, you know, they're just the natural progression, I think, of recovery and the program and going to meetings and time and all this other stuff. You know, I shared in the podcast the other day, you know, if you've, because I was sort of talking about the promises, and I'm like, you know, if you've reached, if I have done a thorough, honest, you know, work on the, you know, the first nine steps, you know, the promises don't matter, right? If I've done the work and really dug in on the first nine steps, coins don't matter. All of those things that are so important to me early on in recovery, like the list of the promises or getting that coin, start to be a little less important because, you know, obviously through the first nine steps, we learn the moral inventory and, you know, all the wonderful things that are to be learned. And that's even at the first try, right? You know, I can say I've continued to learn, and I still continue to learn. But, you know, it's, you know, more becomes revealed, and some of those things that seem so important aren't as important. And of course, you know, chatting with him, and you know, and he's done this a couple times, and you know, and we were talking, and I said, "How's your recovery?" And he's like, "You know, everything's good. You know, not making as much mini meetings as I would like, but everything is good." And I, of course, had to say, "Well, why not? Why not? Why not make enough meetings?" And I think he's going through what a lot of us go through, and I can tell, you know, in my, and I've, you know, obviously shared it many times. When I came into this program in 1997, I had a little, you know, I had an apartment, and I had a job, and I had hopes and dreams. I had an existence, I had a relationship with my parents, but not many other people. You know, most of everybody else had found me to be unmanageable in my behavior and my drinking and stuff. And then, of course, getting sober in 97, and then, you know, and being, you know, meetings every day, you know, just, and I've seen this in me. I see this in other people. Sometimes, you know, the amount of meetings, I can say for me, the more, I went to a lot of meetings because I wasn't working a lot of program. Right? I was doing everything that I could so that it looked to you or to whoever might be watching that I'm really doing a good job. But on the inside, not really working a program, not really being thorough, not being honest, not working these steps like I should, but going to a hell of a lot of meetings, right? The meetings were basically like kind of the basket that sort of kept it all together. And for a person like me, and I'm like, look at all the meetings I'm going to. I must be doing fantastic. You know, how you doing? Good. I'm going to a lot of meetings. Okay. And I see that in recovery. I see people going to a lot of meetings, but not really working a program, not really getting the benefits of all the wonderful things that come from the steps, just getting the benefits of not drinking and going to a lot of meetings. And listen, it's important, right? You got to do that. It is the beginning. But life gets better. Life gets better. Life got better for me. You know, I came in, you know, the second time, and I had lost everything. I mean, I had gotten an education. I mean, I hadn't, you know, I was at the bottom. I gave it all away, I guess you should say. But, and then, you know, when I came back to this program, I was like, one thing I have to do, and I can't forget this, is that I need to make sure that I hit 3 meetings a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And, it, you know, it's great. It's a great idea. It's, you know, it's a great suggestion. It's just not always easy to do. And the problem is that for me, my life got better, right? You know, I started to, you know, clean up some of the mess that I had made in the first run. You know, I started to have relationships again. You know, I got married. I got, you know, had kids, opened a business, started my own salon. Really doing all of the wonderful things that, you know, they're not listed in the promises, but they are things that start to happen to us, or happen, at least happened to me when I got sober. You know, I've always, you know, like my buddy Matt used to say, as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, man, you can do whatever. And I tried it, right? Opening a salon, which I never thought I could do, but I got to do all of these wonderful things, and I started to put meetings again on the back burner. And, you know, I'm not going to say if that happens, you're going to drink again. But there's a very, very, very good chance that if I put meetings on the back burner again, then I'm going to drink again. It's just, unfortunately, the reality. It's like, look at all the examples around me, but I'm not going to pay attention to any of them and think that I'm different. No. I would say even when I went back out, you know, when I, this guy going to all these meetings living in this town, and when I moved over to Easton, I didn't go to a meeting every day. In fact, I went to a couple, and I had 100 reasons why I didn't like the meetings and stopped pretty much going to meetings altogether. But I was, you know, I had a new relationship. We were out going to the gym, and we're out running and going out to dinner and, you know, doing all the great things that come from being sober. Except for the one thing that was most important, which was going to meetings. And I've shared multiple times how that slowly, and it wasn't, you know, I've always said it, when I drank again, it wasn't because I sniffed a bottle of vodka. You know, it was one little thing that led to one little thing over here, that went to one little thing over here that slowly unwound my recovery. So slow, so, you know, so vague that I couldn't even notice it. You know, when all of a sudden that voice is like, maybe you should try. And it wasn't vodka. It was beer. And it was, why don't we negotiate? We'll just drink on the weekends. And by this time, the voices had me. You know, it was just a matter of how are we going to convince everybody else that this is a good idea. But between me and the voices, it was a great idea. And in fact, I'd had a few drinks prior to even having the negotiation. But when it finally came time, I said, I think I can drink again. And, you know, my wife at the time was like, really? And I go, yeah, but I think I'm just going to do beer. And off we went. And it's so obvious when I look at it today and talking to my buddy this morning. And, you know, and of course, when anybody says that, you know, I haven't been making a lot of meetings, and then they have a lot of great reasons. And I'm like, you know, well, how far do I want to, like, get into this? How, you know, how, what, is it my job to point out to a friend doing the same thing I am that, you know, we got to, you know, keep sticking with those meetings because it's going to bite us? But I don't want to be a nag. But it is. That's the case. You got to be careful, whether it's him or anybody else. And I've seen it, unfortunately, so many times. One of the things about when I do, the fact that I do go to 3 meetings a week, I see a lot of people. And I see a lot of people come, and I see a lot of people go. You know, if I go to one meeting a week, and if I miss that meeting, I'm going to one meeting every 2 weeks. You know, I'm not in the herd. I'm not, you know, getting the vibe of the people. I don't know what's going on. And, you know, solid recovery on a, you know, and like I was telling him, you know, it's like I have diabetes. This is my shot. You know, people that have diabetes, they don't get to decide when and where, or if they want, even want to at all, take their shot. They have to take the shot. They have to, you know, or they'll die or suffer. And that's sort of the way that I treat this recovery this time is, you know, this is the most important thing I do. It is a shot. It is, you know, my insulin. And, you know, I shared a few days, I don't know, I guess last week when that guy tapped his watch. That's the Friday night meeting. I haven't been back because I have a resentment, and it's justified in my mind, which we all know that is not good. And I either need to find another meeting or I need to go back into the meeting. And the funny part is that just because he tapped his watch doesn't mean he was wrong, right? I might have talked too long. I don't even know. I try to be aware of that. I don't find myself one that just has to talk for a long time. I think I was just trying to get out this point about the second step. But, you know, I became, you know, a victim. I became very judgmental. I completely left the reservation. And I took the family to Panera the other night, and we had dinner, and I ran into a buddy of mine that goes to that meeting. And I go, are you going to the meeting tonight? This was last Friday, in fact. He goes, yeah, I'm eating, then I'm going. You going? I go, no, I'm not going. He's like, why? And I go, because so-and-so tapped his watch, and I'm pissed. And he's like, he looked at me, you know, half mouthful of sandwich. It was like, really? You're doing that? And I said, yes. He said, all right. Well, listen, have a good night. And I was like, all right. And of course I didn't go, and now I feel like a fool. So I'm going to have to probably go to that meeting on Friday and just get over it because, you know, that's what we do. It's either get over it or get drunk. And I do not want to get drunk. No, thank you. I'm already having enough rib issues right now. I can imagine if I was drunk, what I would fucking break or hurt. So, you know, if you're out there and you're struggling, you know, I've had to, you know, this time around, one of the challenges I think that a lot of people have is, you know, our families. You're going to another meeting. Why do you have to go to a meeting? You don't have to go. Just stay home tonight. And these are conversations I've had many times. And I've had to tell my family, I go, guys, listen, I got to do this. You know, this is my medication. I'm an alcoholic, and I need to go to meetings, and it's just the way it is. And so they understood. This was made, I mean, all of my kids have gone to meetings with me for many years. They've all had their iPads and their coloring books and their crayons, and they've all sat in other rooms or sat with me. I mean, my middle son, he went to meetings in a car carrier. So they're completely familiar with how these meetings work. But, you know, at some point they're like, you know, do you really need to go? Let's have dinner. And I have to tell them, guys, I have to go. And so they don't even question it anymore. And sometimes when the kids will say something, my wife's like, Daddy's got to go to the meeting. This is just what he does. It's made very clear. So I can't blame them. It starts to be other things, right? Like people tapping their watch and pointing out other things. These are the devils. These are the demons. These are the wolves that come slowly creeping in and start to, next thing you know, I'm not going to meetings. Next thing you know, I haven't been to a meeting in a while. Next thing you know, I'm not comfortable going back to the meeting. It starts to snowball. And, you know, I don't want to get this freaking far and then eventually pick up. And the worst part for me is, you know, when I'm picking up a drink, there's a lot of other bad stuff happening. It's just not good. I revert back to a lot of bad behavior, which I do not want to do. That does not bring peace, love, and free of fear. It's all fear. It's no peace, and there's no love. And, you know, drinking is just one character defect that shows back up, but there's a whole shitload that follow. And I don't want any of that. I don't want to spend the next 10 years, you know, cleaning that up, making those amends, you know, begging for forgiveness. I mean, I just, you know, I was laughing. My ex-wife, my middle son's mom, took him up. You know, he was born with a club foot. And of course, you know, we had taken him to AI DuPont, and they did all these cool braces. And, you know, he's in good shape now, but he's still a patient there. And so we take him up. And she took him up, I shouldn't say. She just texted me, can you take him in November? So we do it. But she took him up yesterday, and I called him, of course, to find out how the day was, how the appointment was, and he didn't answer. So I called her, and then she answered, and she was there with her boyfriend, who is just an amazing guy. And I and him had like this three-way conversation about, you know, their visit, and then, of course, about some politics and different stuff. But we were just having a great conversation, laughing, you know, not too badly on the character defects. We weren't pointing out too many other people's flaws, but we were having a fun conversation. And you know, I don't want to lose that, right? I don't want to, you know, that's, you know, when that divorce happened, that was a, you know, I wasn't drinking, but I was not thinking either. And, you know, it was a really rough time and a great opportunity for her to absolutely hate me. And she might have for a while, but I had to make an amends. And not that I wanted her back, but I wanted to, she didn't deserve that. And so I had to make some amends, and I continued to. And I told her, listen, I'm not going to obviously be your husband, but I will be the best ex-husband I can be. And I've continued to do that. And we have a great relationship, and I get along with her boyfriend. He's funny, and we were laughing yesterday. And so, you know, it's not just, you know, don't go to meetings, pick up a drink, you know, shame on me. It's this whole network of things around me, right? I remember when they were talking about addiction, and you know, people say, oh, that drug addict. But, you know, there's so many people. You know, there's that drug addict's family, right? And if they have siblings, they're involved. And then it's the two or three friends that are friends with each one of those people that hear about the story, so they're affected. So it can be up to, you know, 50, 40 or 50 people that are all affected by one person. And, you know, if I started drinking, it would be, you know, there would be a real... Luckily, my oldest son, he is... He's on his own in college and stuff, but it would affect everybody, and not just me. You know, I wouldn't be the only one getting drunk. It would be a huge shockwave, you know, and I don't want that. And so I have to just, you know, that's the rule. Three meetings a week. I didn't go last Friday. I'm sharing about that today. I'm going to go this Friday. I'll go tomorrow and get back into it. But I got three insulin shots a week. And that's, you know, for a person, you know, that's got almost seven, oh, I guess I'll have 18 years this year. But that's a lot of meetings for someone that's been doing this for 18 years, 17 and a half years. You know, a lot of people go to one meeting a week. Some people don't even go to any meetings a week. I don't know. Then there's that part, you know, to be there for the next alcoholic, which always always sort of ties it back in. And just when you think you're out, there's that. And, you know, if there wouldn't have been an alcoholic there to shake my hand when I walked in, I wouldn't be here today. So there's always that. All right, let's read the daily reflections and see what's happening. Big day at work today. I'm excited. Weather's nice. Grass is cut. This is all good. All right, April 30th, the Great Paradox. These legacies of suffering, of recovery, are easily passed among alcoholics, one to the other. This is our gift from God, and it bestows upon others like us is the one aim that today animates AAs all around the globe. Huh. I'm going to read that again because I don't really know what I just said. Let me try that. The Great Paradox. These legacies of suffering and of recovery are easily passed among alcoholics, one to the other. This is our gift from God, and it bestows us, bestow upon others like us is the one aim that today animates AAs all around the globe. All right, 12 steps, 12 traditions. The great paradox of AA is that I know I cannot keep the precious gift of sobriety unless I give it away. My primary purpose is to stay sober in AA. I have no other goal, and the importance of this is a matter of life or death for me. If I veer from this purpose, I lose. But AA is not only for me, it is for the alcoholic who still suffers. The legions of recovering alcoholics stay sober by sharing with fellow alcoholics. The way to my recovery is to show others in AA that when I share with them, we grow. We both grow in the grace of the higher power, and both of us are on the road to a happy destiny. Yep. Basically, that's sort of what I just said. For all the hundreds of reasons why I need to stay sober, the big one is to be there for the next alcoholic. Well, listen, I appreciate you letting me share. I hope everyone has a great day, and I'll catch you later. Bye.
By overdosed on gamma rays, another God's creation destined to be thrown away. Oh, silver and crazy horse, they forged the north and west. Then we had sitting bullshit, I fucked up as a den. No, I had talking to his mirror. What's it say back? A tragedy, a peril.